Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
I'm still shaking right now. I'm just so honored to be included in this draft class.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're with you until 12 noon this morning. I guess that would be this afternoon, depending on your opinion. But either way, there is an absolute ton to talk about in the hockey world. Pleased to be joined in studio by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. They're my cohorts on this show. Gentlemen, hello.
Hello. Good morning, Drew. It's great to be here, and it's going to be a lot of fun today to talk about all of these pre-trade deadline talks.
Or the deadline, well, there's been about 13 trades today. There's about how many? 10 trades?
10 trades this week. Yeah, so, not include, and with apologies to the Aaron Boros family, I wasn't including that trade.
Yeah, Brian Berg makes about, you know, one trade every few weeks for a fighter who plays on the fourth line and never actually sees any significant time. And he's always trading like seventh round. I think he's like traded like 13 seventh round picks in the past 2 years.
Yeah, well, that should tell you all that they're all you need to know about how valyable third seven round picks are.
Happy to be here, though, Drew.
Yes, of course. And my hello there was in honor of Len Lesser.
Of course.
Better known as Uncle Leo from Seinfeld.
Jerry, hello.
There you go. And of course, this show is dedicated to Len Lesser. He passed away at the age of 88 this week. One of our favorite Seinfeld characters of all time. So throughout the show tonight, you'll be hearing a little some of our favorite clips.
That's right.
From Uncle Leo.
There was a point in time when me and Richie would only say hello.
Hello.
Every single time.
It got overtaken for a little while by Hey Now. Larry Sanders Hey Now, but I think it's back to hello.
I think it's back to hello.
Yeah. You can't beat Uncle Leo. Hello. Come join the show. You can go be a part of the show at www.illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And you can always send us an email in studio, drew@IllegalCurve.com. If you want to join in on the live chat that's taking place today, go ahead and do that. Join Michael Remus in the R desk at www.IllegalCurve.com. And, of course, Twitter is a great way to get a hold of us at @IllegalCurve on Twitter. That's oftentimes we'll even read some of the better tweets that we get. So @IllegalCurve. Before we get to the trades, let's recap quickly what happened in the NHL last night.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start in Florida. The Detroit Red Wings are on a road trip through the southern Florida teams. They beat up on Tampa earlier in the week, and they had a tough game last night, but they prevailed 4-3 over the Florida Panthers. You know, it's a team taking care of business, but the Panthers made a showing of it.
Yeah, you know, give it a good effort against Detroit, but they're not in the same league.
It's probably a home game there for Detroit, more or less, also. You know, like when you see some of the Torontos or Montreals go down to Florida.
Panthers haven't made the playoffs in like 10 years.
Yeah. And they're not making it this year either.
No.
In Ottawa last night, the new look Boston Bruins, after a very busy day of wheeling and dealing, and we'll talk about that for the first hour of the program, is going to be all trade-related. Boston beat up in Ottawa. They doubled them up 4-2, Boston over Ottawa. Ottawa's really in a dogfight to get that first overall pick.
Yeah, boys, Rich, Brad Marchand, I was just going to say quickly, Brad Marchand got another two goals last night. Caberle played but didn't get any points. But Boston is now obviously probably done trading, and They look good, and they've been good for a while now. They've been a team that's been ready for the playoffs basically the whole year.
Eric DeHatch had a good article about that yesterday in the Globe, talking about how Boston obviously thinks that they can seize an opportunity here with the Pittsburgh having all the injury
troubles,
and Washington not really having an identity in terms of offense or defense at this point. Obviously, the Flyers would probably be the favorite in the East, but I have a few things to say about the Bruins and their moves, and I'll save it for
Save it for the first hour. After this quick segment, where the first hour is all going to be on the trade, so you can stay tuned for that. In Minnesota last night, Anaheim went into Minnesota and got absolutely blown out. 5-1, the Wild take care of business on home ice against the Ducks.
That game kind of turned on a no-call and a Corey Perry rush. He got tripped. There wasn't a penalty on the play, even though there should have been. Minnesota came down the other way, scored, and that was the momentum changer.
In Chicago last night, the struggles of the Blackhawks continue. 4-3, Columbus beats Chicago in Chicago.
Yeah, Joel Quenneville wasn't behind the bench because he's still in hospital, recovering. So it's not coming to my mind right now who the Blackhawks assistant coach that was behind the bench.
Haviland.
I think he might be a new head assistant, right? But
their head assistant last year was John Torchetti, so somewhat he's on the staff. But
that was a win that those two teams are separated by 1 point now. I think Chicago's only 1 point ahead of Columbus after yesterday's win. So that was a game that Chicago had to win. You know how much of an impact Quenneville not being there. Had
it's a distraction.
It's a distraction more so. I mean, they're still the same team, but Columbus was outplayed. I mean, Chicago. I think they had 40 shots on net. Mason made 37 saves, but Chicago is. They're a team that needs every single point because they're, I think, still four back. So
on a positive note, though, Patrick Kane did score for the Blackhawks, which means he wasn't at the bar getting drunk. So, you know, that's a positive sign for the Blackhawks.
The pictures? He's partying?
The pictures. We'll talk about that later on in Rapid Fire tonight. Patrick Kane's out on the town again, and everybody beware, apparently, boys and girls, okay, if you look at the pictures. Anyways, we'll talk about that later on. In Carolina last night, they retired Rod Brindamore's jersey. It was fitting that they did it on a night when Philadelphia was in town. Mm-hmm. The Hurricanes
and Carolina won.
Yeah, well, thank you. You're interrupting me. The Hurricanes take care of business 3-2 on home ice in front of Rod Brindamore. I think the Stanley Cup was also in attendance, if I read correctly.
Was Eric Lindros in attendance?
No.
Oh, okay.
Why would Eric Lindros be in attendance?
I don't know.
Okay, that's just odd. Anyways, Carolina 3, Philadelphia 2. You know, Carolina's in a dogfight to get that final East playoff spot and then lose in the first round. In Buffalo last night, the struggles of the Buffalo Sabres continue unabated. 3-0, St. Louis beats Buffalo. The Sabres continue to struggle. We'll see what happens if they're able to pull it off. We've sort of said we thought they'd sneak into the eighth spot. Right now, I'm not sure.
I think so. Atlanta's really falling back. We'll talk to Chris Vidal more about that in hour number two. But, you know, Drew, I mean, they're playing against Carolina. Carolina beats a team like Philly. That's a big win. You know, regardless of the night, that's a big win. Buffalo comes in. They have a lot of talent. I mean, they do miss Derek Roy, mind you, but the talent is there in Buffalo to get that final playoff spot and be dangerous. And for whatever reason, they just can't seem to put things together.
Yeah, 4 points behind Carolina for the eighth playoff spot now.
It's amazing how St. Louis won that game. I think Eric Johnson was traded in the third period of that game yesterday. I don't know what's going on.
That was the big trade that happened overnight last night. So if you're just tuning in, we're going to talk about that. Eric Johnson, former first overall draft pick, traded to Colorado. Happened probably about 1 a.m., 2 a.m. last night. So we're going to talk about that
in the next
segment.
And that's a trade, Drew. We'll get into it. But that's one thing. That's a trade that wasn't a money-related trade.
No, that was just a trade where, you know, it was just a hockey trade, a straight-up hockey trade, but one that sort of blew us all away when it took place, literally about 1:32 a.m. last night.
Well, that to me, and you know what's kind of odd about that trade is that it's internal Western Conference, and it's, to me, that's a shake-up trade.
That's a good way of putting it. We'll talk about it in more details coming up, of course. And then the final game last night in New Jersey, the hottest team in the NHL continues to be the New Jersey Devils. They beat the New York Rangers 1-0. Devils are now 8-1-1 in their last 10. At this point in time, you know, how, I know it's a long shot, but are they going to get into number 8?
No.
You still say no?
No. Drew, every
hold on, let's put something on the board here.
Do I put it on the board here?
Ezra? Are you back on the Devil's bandwagon?
By the way, I also say no. So
the Eastern Conference, I mean, Drew, in this day and age, you can't make up ground.
12 points behind?
12 points behind. It's February 19th.
12 points behind with 24 games to go?
Insanity. How many teams are between them and the eighth spot, too?
Right now, 4.
You try and hop 4 teams, 5 teams.
Well, they could hop them by if they keep it up at this rate. I mean, they just got to get. They have to do it in 2 stages. They have to get over Toronto and Florida.
How many points do they have?
They have 52 points. Carolina's in 8th at 64 points.
They have 24 years.
And they have 24 to go.
So if they were to win
19,
20 of them,
yeah,
they have 40 points.
Yeah.
And they have, you said how many points do they have?
52. That would give them 92 points.
So they got to win 20 of 24 games to maybe get in.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying they're putting themselves back in the discussion now.
No, your discussion, not mine.
Okay, fine. That's fine. Somebody make sure to record this date in case I'm going to be right and Richard's going to be wrong.
Guys,
again.
It's probably not going to happen that the Devils are going to make the playoffs, but in their last 17,
hell of a run, though.
The last 17, they're 13-1-3 or something. So regardless of make the playoffs,
well,
it's been a great run.
It really points to me. I forget all that stuff. It points to the fact that they made the coaching change at the wrong time. Either you tank the season and take the pick.
Or you make the coaching change.
They made
earlier.
The change when the season was done. They make it before they could have a chance. They make it. They wait until the end of the season. They get a high draft pick, then they make it.
I think
Lamoriello miscalculated there. Let's be honest.
I think that's fair commentary.
Miscalculated a lot in the last couple of years.
Yes, I've been harsh on him the last couple of years, and I think it's with good reason. Anyways, that was the night in the NHL last night. A typical Saturday night in the NHL, and of course tomorrow in Calgary is the Heritage Classic. That's sort of the big thing on the weekend.
Why isn't anybody talking about the Heritage Classic?
Well, we're going to talk about it with Stu Hackle coming up. Stu Hackle at SI.com. We're going to be talking about it with him later on in the program. It's a good question, Ezzy, and we'll touch on that. And of course, in the United States tomorrow, it's Hockey Day in America. So for the first time in as long as I can remember, a doubleheader of NHL hockey taking place.
It's pretty good. They might cut out the third periods of both to go to some kind of like horse grooming, but
horse grooming, not even horse racing, horse grooming.
No, it's actually, Richie. Okay. It's actually the Westminster Kennel Club.
No,
dog
the Westminster was earlier this week.
Oh, it's already done.
Yeah, done with. It was good entertainment as usual.
Who ended up winning?
You watched it? I didn't watch it.
Who won, Drew? The Boston Terrier, or was it the?
A very rare breed of dog called the Brixton.
Which is your dog.
That's
your
my dog. Yeah. I know it's my dog.
Your dog could be a show dog. I can see that. It's got good posture.
Not
discipline. Friendly.
She would actually eat the other dogs. That's the only downside to the whole thing. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, it's trades, and more trades for the next hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
People probably haven't heard the trade yet. It went down last night like 1:30 in the morning. Tell people the exact trade, Drew.
Yeah, it happened late last night, literally 1:30 in the morning. The trade is as follows. Going to Colorado from the St. Louis Blues are Eric Johnson, Jay McClement, and a first-round draft pick.
There's a condition on it,
depending on when the...
The Blues finish bottom 10.
Yes, the Blues,
this year,
then they can make the trade over to 20. They can flip it over
to
the first-round pick to 2012.
And then if that happens, then Colorado's second-round pick, which is also involved, would be move to 2012.
That's right. So going to Colorado, Eric Johnson, first overall draft pick in 2006.
Pick before the likes of Jonathan Taves, Jordan Staal, and Nicholas Backstrom.
That's right. So he has not proven to be the stud that everybody, and he's had injuries and everything else.
22.
Again, let's go through it quickly. Eric Johnson, McClement, and a conditional first-round draft pick going to Colorado in exchange for Chris Stewart, rookie defenseman Kevin Shattenkirk, and a conditional second-round draft pick. An absolute stunning trade, the kind of trade you don't see anymore. When I found out about the trade earlier this morning, what jumped to mind sort of to me, to a much lesser degree, of course, is the Chris Pronger for Brendan Shanahan trade from God knows what year was that.
Oh, that was 93, 94, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, that's sort of what came to mind. What sort of came to mind to me? Your thoughts on the trade, guys?
Like I mentioned before, to me, this is some type of shakeup. Because if there's a story here that I'm not aware of as far as the Blues' future plans for Eric Johnson goes, maybe I'm wrong, but to me, Eric Johnson was drafted, first overall for a reason. He was to become the cornerstone of the franchise. I realized that Eric Johnson, missed a full year, and Eric Johnson has had troubles developing, Richie, and maybe he didn't develop as fast as a Drew Doughty, for instance. But to me, this trade is shocking. I mean, to think that St. Louis got the best player, really arguably, in Chris Stewart out of this deal, to me means that it's probably going to be a little bit more beneficial for St. Louis. Colorado, let's be honest, this season for Colorado became, pretty bad pretty quick, when they traded for Thomas Fleischmann and he went down, and then obviously the whole Forsberg thing. I realize Peter Forsberg, he's earned the right as one of the best players ever to come back, but I think that was a negative distraction. And to me, this is almost more so Colorado reading the writing on the wall and saying that, we want to get someone who's going to help us more for the future, whereas St. Louis, I think, benefits more in getting the best forward. I think Chris Stewart is the key to the deal, not Eric Johnson.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. I mean, what you have here is you have a couple players. We can go through the players, really. I mean,
yeah, let's go through it.
Let's go through from Colorado, St. Louis. Chris Stewart is a beautiful skater. He's a huge player. He's 6'4", 6'5". 230, 240, big boy. He's hard to get off the puck, can move, goes to the net, has got a good shot. He has his points where he's in and out, but all scorers do. His upside is 30, 35 goals, guys, 70 points. He's more of a scorer than a passer. 70 points. Power forward. They don't grow on trees, guys.
Throwback power forward.
A second-year power forward also. Yes. I mean, this is a young guy.
Time, played in the OHL, went through the AHL, went through Lake Erie. I like his game. We've talked a lot about it, you know, months ago about his game. Obviously, he got in a fight and he injured his hand, which we talked to Adrian Dater about, and he hasn't really been the same since in terms of his production. But he's a young player, so, you know. Chris Stewart is 22 years old, I believe. And then, I'm going to check on that right now. He's 22. All the players in this trade are 22. Kevin Shattenkirk is a smaller, you know, he's a smaller defenseman, just below 6 feet. One of the best skaters I've seen in a long time in terms of, you know, as good as anybody on the back end in terms of his speed. Can move the puck. He's a really, really talented offensive player. Not as great in his own zone. Lacks in defensively, you know, in terms of strength. In terms of, you know, reading the play, sometimes he gets a little bit, too eager to get into the offensive side of the game. But, you know, can produce on the back end. Okay, so those are the two players going to St. Louis. McClement is a throw-in, you know, depth line player who can kill penalties and do the little things for you. And, you know, he's not going to be a difference maker. Eric Johnson is to me is the key of the trade, but I understand your point because Eric Johnson hasn't, you know, fulfilled the expectation that people had for him. Now, granted, he's 22, like the other players are, the two other young players are. But Eric Johnson's got a boom of a shot. He's a good skater. He's physical. He's got all the tools. But I mean, St. Louis, Armstrong. John Davidson, they've had a few years to watch him here. Obviously, the year that he hurt his knee and tore his knee up in the golf cart when he was, you know, horsing around, cost him a year of production productivity. But last year he was pretty good. Last year I thought he was really coming along, playing the Olympics. And this year he hadn't taken the next steps, and I wonder. Something you have to analyze.
Have they seen a ceiling?
Have they seen a lack of a willingness to grow as a player? And the question is, though, is will change of scenery, you know, change up? Or guys, he's 22. What if he matures at 25? You're giving up a player, number one, big-time defensemen are harder to find than power forwards. But at the same time, I think the risk, it's a risk-reward to me. There's obviously a risk in St. Louis dealing him, but it's a very big risk-reward trade for Colorado because you know basically what Stewart's going to give you right now for the most part.
Yeah.
Shattenkirk's going to be a good, you know, he'd probably be a 30 to 40-point defenseman who can skate well and play in your top four. Will Johnson be the number one guy? Number one.
Number two
defenseman probably won't cut it. Number two probably will. Anything below that obviously won't.
The question is, I think from my perspective, Eric Johnson's certainly a good defenseman, top two defenseman, top three defenseman. But, getting Chris Stewart and Shattenkirk, I think the fact that they get Shattenkirk to somewhat offset the loss of...
That's right. Right-handed shooting defenseman, Mike Johnson. Offensive.
Yeah.
Mike Johnson.
Makes a good first pass.
Makes a very good first pass.
You know, he might not be as big and as physical, but you're getting Chris Stewart, who's just a beast. When healthy and everything else. And Chris Stewart's still, this is his second year in the league.
Yeah.
So you're getting a beast.
Shattenkirk's first year.
That's right. You're getting a beast of a player. You're getting a solid, a guy who's a rookie defenseman who's already proven himself to be a good NHL defenseman who's only going to get better. Yeah. And you're giving up on a guy who hasn't taken that next step and you're not sure right now. At this point in his career, the doubts are there in your mind if he's going to take that next step.
Yeah, at the same time, Drew, I mean, this is his third full season in the National Hockey League. Third full season.
If he hasn't taken that next step, is he going to?
Defensemen develop a little bit later. It takes a little more time.
I agree that. It takes a little bit more time. So you haven't even seen the best that Kevin Shattenkirk's going to put out there.
I agree with that. Obviously, he's an older player. So in terms of he came into the league this year, he's had a little more seasoning and at the lower levels of the AHL and at the college level.
Yeah. But I mean, Shattenkirk. I mean, he's
a Minnesota guy, Johnson, and that needs to be brought up because the Minnesota guys haven't really translated that particularly well. I mean, don't get me wrong, they have, but not in line with the expectations that they have.
By Minnesota guys, you mean University of Minnesota guys,
right? And by that I mean the Eric Johnsons and the Phil Kessels. I mean, they produce, but maybe sometimes not. Blake Wheeler, another one there, maybe not what other people expected for them in terms of being absolutely take over the game superstars.
You know, if you're Colorado, you're giving up probably you're giving up the best and the third best players in this trade.
I know about the best, but you're probably giving up the best and the third best players.
That to me is just a bad recipe for success. Unless you see Eric Johnson,
defensemen like that don't grow on trees, Drew.
I know, but unless you see Eric Johnson developing into the second coming, or you know, or at least a step below of a Chris Pronger level, I think you're making a bad deal.
You made the point about Pronger, though.
Yeah.
What do you think the Pronger analysis was years ago? Did they have radios then?
It was 1995.
But what do you think the analysis was then? Pronger's got a bad attitude. I'm not sure if it's so much about Johnson. Bad attitude. He's cocky. Blah, blah, blah. all that stuff. Well, defenseman like Chris, defenseman this side, now, he's not Chris Pronger. Chris Pronger is an exceptional defenseman.
Right.
But the skill set is there.
But he has to develop, unless he develops into a clone or a somewhat of a clone of Chris Pronger, it's a bad trade for Colorado from my perspective.
But think about it this way. Excuse me.
You can't take, hold on, though. I don't think we're talking Chris Pronger for Brendan Shanahan here. Let's not put Chris Stewart and Brendan Shanahan category. But I think that this trade makes sense in the short term for both teams if they think that the players they have aren't going to turn out. And I think that because these players are so young, being 21 to 23, this is a trade that you can't pick a short term winner or loser. It's a long term winner or loser situation. I just don't think that this trade isn't going to push either of these teams into the playoffs.
No, it's not a trade for now. It's not a trade about the playoffs. It's a trade about
these teams
the
are
future.
Still competing for a playoff spot. They're not.
It's not a trade. It's not a trade about the playoffs by a long shot. This is not about.
I didn't say the trade was about the playoffs. I said these teams are still in the playoff.
So what? If they snuck into the eighth spot, it's like Brian Burke said. Success to me is not sneaking into the eighth spot and then getting blown out in the first round of the playoffs.
But they're still. That doesn't.
This trade has nothing to do with the playoffs.
They're still competing for a playoff.
It doesn't matter.
Whether or not you think they're going to make it, doesn't mean that they're still not competing.
They're not competing for a playoff spot. This trade has nothing to do with the playoffs.
So then why did St. Louis win last night if they're not competing for a playoff spot?
They're playing to win, but they don't care about the playoffs. This year is a lost year for them. They're looking to next year. And next year, what do they see?
Why is it a lost year if they can still make the playoffs?
They can't. They're not going to. It's done. They're not making the playoffs. This trade has nothing to do with that.
Put it on the board?
They can mathematically make the playoffs.
Okay, don't talk to me about playoffs right now. Don't talk to me about playoffs.
Why?
Because this has nothing to do with the playoffs. It's looking at a complete red herring when you're talking about the trade.
Playoffs?
Nothing to do with the playoffs.
My point is that these two teams are not out of the playoffs, so they still have a chance to make the playoffs.
Great. Doesn't make a difference. The New York Islanders officially aren't out of the playoffs. They're not making trades for the playoffs.
But Drew, the Blues are closer to a playoff spot than the Islanders.
They're not getting anywhere near the playoffs.
Hold on. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Okay. Perspective, though. If you're Colorado, you're giving up Stewart and Shattenkirk in the second rounder, and you're giving them up, you view them as assets.
Yes.
And you're saying, hey, I'm going to bank on Eric Johnson becoming the guy that he hasn't yet become. If you're St. Louis, you're getting the quality guys that Colorado views as quality guys, but you clearly see something in Eric Johnson that you don't think he'll become a quality guy. There's a lot about the situation, obviously, that we don't know, but Doug Armstrong better be darn sure
that Eric Johnson is not going to be the next Chris Pronger.
Or just
slightly below
number
Chris
one
Pronger.
NHL defense. Exactly.
I just think that you're going to get, I think you got Chris Stewart and you got Kevin Shattenkirk, and these are two guys who can play on your team for the next 10 to 12 years, no questions asked. And when you can get two of those guys that are playing at a top flight level in either your first or second lines and your first or second defensive pairing, you make that trade.
I mean, that's a fair argument, Drew.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, we still have the Thomas Cabrelle trade, the Christopher Stieg trade, tons more trades to talk about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Uncle Leo from Seinfeld passed away this week at the age of 88. Len Lesser, another tribute to Mr. Uncle Leo.
I'm an old man. I'm confused. I thought I paid for it. What's my name? Could you take me home?
No. That, of course, being the famous shoplifting, where apparently all old people shoplift now. I've spoken about it with my grandparents. They just said they were confused. Won't somebody please take me home? I don't know what that means. apparently they're stealing batteries as well. Legendary criminals that they are. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tweet us at Illegal Curve. Join the live chat taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. And, of course, you can befriend us on Facebook at facebook.com/illegalcurve. The other trade this week, the second biggest trade after this one broke last night, our long national nightmare is over. Thomas Cabrelle has finally been traded from the Toronto Maple Leafs, going to Boston for a first-round pick. Prospect Joe Colborne and a conditional pick in 2012. That conditional pick is a second rounder if Boston re-signs Thomas Cabrelle, or if they, I believe, either make or win the Stanley Cup this year with Thomas Cabrelle.
Right.
I'm just glad that we can finally stop talking about this. Personally, a lot to give up, but I think Boston sees this as their chance to win the Stanley Cup this year.
A couple of things. I think a lot to give up. Thomas Cabrelle had a no trade clause. He could choose where he wanted to go. He only was going to go to Boston. Boston knew he was only going to go to them. Yet they gave up Joe Colborne, a first round pick, and a conditional, possibly a second rounder.
You're saying it's too much?
I mean, is Thomas Caberle that big a difference maker? Okay, listen to it. Caberle's a difference maker, sure. But is Caberle that much of a difference maker over some other player available on the trade market who's a pending UFA? If he's under contract, it'd be different. A pending UFA.
So you're saying you're giving up for a lot for a guy who there's no guarantee he's coming back to your team next year?
Even if he does, then you're going to cost you more. Second round pick. You could have got him in free agency. They weren't going to re-sign him. Toronto had only one place to trade him. Maybe two. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like the only team who was willing to waive his no-trade clause for was Toronto.
Now, in terms of the return, now there's I think Burke did well here, Ezzy. But there's certainly ways for them to screw it up. First of all, Colborne is a slower developing player. We're going to talk about Kyle Kocher about that.
Yes.
10:45 this morning.
That's right.
So an hour or two.
A good friend of ours who's in tune as in tune as anyone else with the prospects that currently populate the game of hockey.
Wrote a prospect post on our Legal Curve website a couple years ago about Joe Colborne.
Yeah.
Colborne's soft for a big guy.
Plays. You know, they say he's 6'2", but he plays like he's 5'8", is what they say.
Yeah, a big boy, and he's still taller than 6'2".
That's a huge height difference.
He's tall. I think he's taller than 6'2".
Okay.
And he's soft. And I think, so this is the thing. Can he develop into maybe a top, you know, maybe a second-line center? Can he develop into that? I don't know. But you have that, and then you have the lower draft pick. Good again. You're going to have two low draft picks. But the Leafs have one problem with their draft picks.
They're not good drafting. They're not good at drafting.
Well, there's ways for them to screw it up.
A lot of people, when they saw this trade, and I actually retweeted this on my Twitter account, but a lot of people, when they saw this trade, they thought that Toronto was getting their high pick back.
Yeah, well, people are stupid.
But they're not. And I actually think this is my analysis of this trade, because I obviously, you know, this was the only thing that was being tweeted about yesterday. I think that the Bruins gave up too much, and yep. I think that the Leafs didn't get enough. And I know that sounds weird, but I think that...
Makes sense.
I think that the Leafs here are getting a late first-round draft pick. And I'm sorry to the Leafs scouting department. I mean, I think Drew tweeted this on the Illegal Curve account about 4 days ago. The Leafs don't have the best draft record. I mean, when was the last time the Leafs drafted someone in the mid to late first round and they turned out to be, you know, a top six forward? I mean, it was a long time ago. I mean, I think that the Bruins, by giving up a first-round draft pick plus giving up Colborne, who's got, you know, he's got maybe a second line potential max. That's what Kyle has said, and we'll talk to him more about it. But I think here the Bruins are definitely completing a team. You're right, Drew. The Bruins, to me, the Bruins can't do any. I'm not sure if they'll get to the conference finals, but the way
they're the second best team in the East.
I was going to say maybe
they're the second
third
best team in the East. I don't think they have enough to get through Philadelphia myself.
To that point, though, you know, the Boston gave up too much and the Leafs didn't get enough. Boston gave up too much, I think. You know, value-wise, Toronto did well. But Toronto didn't get enough, because if you think this is what they got for Caberle at the trade deadline, what could they have got for him in the summer?
Well, that's a fair point. But, you know, to some extent, maybe they couldn't have gotten as much for him in the summer because of the desperation or the teams really that think they could take a run now.
In terms of Boston, I mean, is this guy going to make that much of a difference? He might. Now, are you taking advantage of the Pittsburgh injuries and the Washington lack of identity and all those things? Sure. But there's a lot of teams you got to go through to make the finals. That's why I don't like to mortgage the future for, you know.
But are you really mortgaging the future? Here's what you're giving up. You're giving up Joe Colborne, a 21-year-old guy. You think that if he was going to be an impact player on your team, he'd already be there.
SHL now.
Okay. Second, then you're giving up a late first-round draft pick in a bad draft class. In a bad draft class. You're giving up.
No, apparently not a bad draft class. It's not as good as last year.
Fine, but you're giving up the 25th or the 26th overall pick.
Okay.
I don't consider that mortgaging the future.
Maybe a second-round pick.
What's that?
Maybe a second-round pick.
It's a second-round pick if you do one of two things. Win the Stanley Cup, then everything's worth it.
That is fine.
And then second of all, if you re-sign Caberle. And if you re-sign Caberle, well, now you got a guy who's going to play on your team for 2-3 years and is probably on the downside of his career, but he's not a bad player at that point.
What you want to do is you want to keep the guys coming through and through and through. And when you start mortgaging... You know,
I don't think mortgaging is the right word. I really don't.
It's different, though, Drew, than like the Flyers, for example, who've traded their last three first-round picks, you know, in the Pronger trade and this trade. Because the Flyers have a core of Richards and Carter, Giroux.
Who are all first-round draft picks.
But, yeah, all those guys. Now, Boston obviously has young players like Sagan and like Bergeron.
And another top-10 pick coming to them.
Marchand.
Right, and
let's not
Bergeron.
Get, let's not, they have
no,
top-10 pick coming to them.
They have good young players, too, but they're relying on Chara, they're relying, I mean, at that point, it's fine. I still think they're relying on Chara, they're relying on Recchi. They're relying on some veteran players there. You know, they're not the youngest team in the league here.
No, they're certainly not the youngest team, but it's not like they're more like they're giving up every first round pick for the next 5 years or something.
Unlike the last segment, I think we're not going to have any problem because I agree with you here. I think that they haven't mortgaged the future, and I think in this day and age when these trades happen, people, I think this is the new like fallback thing that people are using now with these trades. If you think they're mortgaging the future because they're giving up a first round draft pick, Well, they already have a first-round draft pick.
They're going to have a second first-round draft pick.
They already have a high first-round draft pick. Plus, they already have guys playing in the NHL who are successful at a very young age. Lucic is only 22. Sagan is 18.
Yep,
I mean, so I think here that, if anything, Drew, absolutely not. You're not mortgaging the future by acquiring Cabrera. He's going to make your team better. He's a perennial 45, 50-point guy. He'll play well with Chara. And you're not giving up something that you, because you have,
you're not subtracting from your roster.
You already have a first round pick, and you already have good young first round picks that you've already developed.
I don't like the trade.
I'm not saying Boston's going to win the cup. I agree with you that there are holes in this team, but I think that they haven't. I think they, now that I think about it a little bit,
anytime you can be a better
a
team
bit
today,
tilted towards Boston.
Anytime you can, you can be a better team today and not give up anything off your active roster. You're giving up, pies in the sky. You're giving up dreams and potentials.
Yeah, I take that back in terms of, like, you know, the overall core, because they have it. You know, you pull up the roster and their core is pretty young, and moving forward, it is a good core. But even so, Drew, I just think what you want to do is continue that group to come through. And if you have that young of a core, that core, a talented young core, then what you want to do is keep them coming.
I don't think they're not going to be coming anymore now. I think you still have a first round.
I realize it's a first rounder, but you get another first rounder. Good teams always have prospects coming through the well.
I think Boston still will have prospects coming through the well. I don't think this changes that. I think this gives them a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And ultimately, isn't that what it's all about? You can hold on to your prospects all you want, and until at some point in time, you need to trade one of those prospects to take that next step. At some point in time, you need to win the Cup.
And I understand the point. I'm just saying, I think they gave up too much for Thomas Cabrera. I don't think he's the difference maker. He's a great puck mover. I don't think he's the difference maker they need. They still give up a fair amount of shots, people don't realize, and he's terrible on his own end.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree on that trade. Let's go to the next trade that Toronto made. That's trading Chris.
A lot of overrated defensemen on that back end, by the way. They're going to be vulnerable, and they play a really good offensive team.
On that Boston back end,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Charles overrated too. So
we have a few minutes. Let's talk about Christopher Stieg going from Toronto to Philly for a first and a third round draft pick.
Also a surprising trade. I mean, Philadelphia, and you could make the argument that, you know, Philadelphia and Vancouver are two teams that have the most depth. Detroit maybe is also in the conversation. But the reason why this trade surprised me a little bit is because Christopher Stieg, after he was traded, ends up playing with Captain Mike Richards. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, what is necessarily wrong with any of the guys that have been playing with Richards? Because Philly has been at the top of the standings for the entire year. They haven't had any guys that are kind of, you know, slowly coming along. Like, you look like a James Van Riemsdyk. It's kind of a tongue twister, actually, now that I think about it. But he's having a good year. He's taking the next step, right, Richie? And you look at a guy like Andreas Nodal, who's taken the next step. Hartnell is a guy who is having a better year. But to me, the trade, you're giving up a first rounder for Versteeg, and I just don't think that putting him with Richards is an improvement with any of the guys, whether it's... I mean, Jaredev is a guy that's maybe been a little bit disappointing on the
Flyers. Why'd you sign Jaredev, though? That's what I wanted to quickly, and let me get it as an aside. Why'd you sign Jaredev? Why'd you bring in, you know, Matt Walker? Matt Walker's injured, but why'd you bring in Jaredev? Why'd you bring in Shelley, who you're apparently trying to trade? Why'd you bring in these players who you're immediately trying to get rid of?
Because it seems like Paul Holmgren has to do something that makes everybody scratch their head each offseason. I mean, that's the only logical answer to that. There was... When they made those signings, people were confused by him then. They're still confused by him now.
I'll give you a core here. I'll give you a Briere, Hartnell, and Lino Kaur, yep, with Richards and Carter and Giroux and Van Riemsdyk. I mean, that's right there, seven guys.
And then you add Christopher Stieg to that.
But my point is, Drew, is, and you have Jaredev, whoever it may be, my point is, yeah, I like Versteeg as a player. Don't get me wrong. I do like him as a player. But are you being the Flyers of old? Are you adding to a strength?
Well, if you were Philly, where's Philly's weakness right now?
I mean, do they have a weakness? Good question.
Yeah.
Their back end is solid. It's cool. I mean,
inexperience in goal.
Wouldn't you want to add a guy like Thomas Vokoun?
Well, there's no saying that you...
Wouldn't you want to use your first round pick and third round pick on a guy like Thomas Vokoun? I mean, I realize that he's signed for long term. Okay, so I mean, and I like Versteeg as a player. But I just question why add a player Versteeg. First of all, can you get a guy, a veteran like Versteeg, who's pending UFA, who's a little bit cheaper?
Probably. Probably.
And if you traded your first-round picks for Chris Pronger, and you draft really well in the late 20s, like you always have in the 20s to mid to late 20s, why would you suddenly, why would you get rid of another first-round pick?
I think it boils down to another, they think this is their year to win the cup, and they have very good reason for thinking that.
My point, Drew, is that there's 30 teams in the league. Only one team wins the cup.
I know. So don't you want to be that one team? Don't you want to do, when you can look back,
I want to be that team this year, next year, and the year after.
And do you think that by signing by trading for Versteeg, they're not that team next year as well?
No, but down the road, Drew.
Down the road when? When is down the road? If you win three straight cups and then
Drew,
the fourth year you don't win the cup.
The team's going to, not you know, a couple years, are going to look down and be like, hey, we just traded three first-round picks.
I think they have young assets that those first-round picks that they traded away aren't necessarily going to hurt them.
And those young assets become players who are paid at their price level or above their price level, and there's no value there, and then you get in the cap problem.
Okay, well, I mean, the cap problem is...
You need cheap players, right?
Yeah.
All these teams have cheap players who are good. Draft picks, you generally turn out to be cheap players who are good.
You play to win. You play to win the cup. Do whatever you have to win the cup that year. That's my point.
Well, the Canadian Soccer Association has a different idea of what sports should be about. But
well, you can't just say to your fans, we didn't want to trade for Versteeg because we didn't like what it would do to us 4 years down the road, even though trading for him is going to win us the cup this year.
You didn't trade for Versteeg, nobody would have noticed.
Nobody
at least Boston's
noticed.
Addressing a need.
I don't think Philly's a better team today for having Chris Versteeg on the roster?
Sure, do I think it's really going to matter once it comes down to it? He's that much better than Nikolaj Jerdev?
I think, yeah. He is better than Nikolaj Jerdev.
Jerdev actually hasn't played bad in spurts this year. He's that
in
much
spurts.
Better? He's that much better?
Yeah,
Chris Versteeg isn't exactly letting the house on fire.
Doesn't matter. Jerdev's not going to get on the ice anytime, and you can't trust Jerdev in a crucial
moment.
Where's
the vision? Why'd you sign him to begin with?
That I'm not
he's a right-handed shooting,
separate issue.
He's a right-handed shooting winger.
That's a separate
who's talented
issue.
And needs to play and has some space.
Absolutely separate issue. I agree with you. They should never have signed Jerdev, but we did. Now you're acknowledging your mistake. You're not going to put him out on the ice in a vulnerable situation. Instead, you rectify that mistake by getting a guy like Versteeg, and you're better suited to make a cup and win the cup this year and next year than you are without making that trade.
You could have got Versteeg for a cheaper amount in the summer when he was available.
But you want to win the cup this year.
You could have got Versteeg in the summer for a cheaper amount.
But you win the cup this year.
But the summer is towards this year.
You're talking about last summer?
When he was available, when Toronto traded for him.
Well, then they traded
hardly any of him. Stalberg and a bunch of
But for whatever for whatever reason, they thought that Jerdev was going to be good enough. Obviously, they didn't see what we all saw. But now that they see it, they realize their error. They're rectifying their error, and they're not hurting their team going forward. In my books,
I think they're.
Let's go to break. More trades to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:45 this morning. Some heated trade discussions going on.
I just want to say something right off the bat. For those who have been listening to our show so far, we're, 45 minutes in here, which is great. I think it's awesome that we're having these heated arguments. We've been arguing a little bit here. That shows you that some of these trades, that probably means these are the trades, the nine or so trades that were made yesterday,
yeah.
There's some good trades in there. Because I realize this could be taking some of the trades away from the trade deadline for everyone's amusement, but... So there's some trades here. If we're having these arguments, and we like to follow every single one of these trades, obviously for our listeners, but there's a few trades here that
they evoke passion,
which is good.
And of course,
passion is good, Drew.
It's worth pointing out the trade deadline Monday, February 28th. We will be on the air from 2 p.m. until 7 p.m. A special Monday edition of the show, the trade deadline recap show, Monday, February 28th, 2 p.m. till 7 p.m. We'll be recapping. All the trades, everything that's gone on in the last couple weeks in the NHL. So stay tuned to Sports Radio 1290 for that. Monday, February 28th, 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. The trade deadline spectacular. Moving on to another trade the Bruins made earlier yesterday. They shipped Blake Wheeler and Mark Stewart to Atlanta for Rich Peverly and Boris Vlahovic. Richie, you said you like the trade from both sides.
Yeah, Drew, you get 23-year-old Blake Wheeler if you're Atlanta. He's a big player. He's hard to move off the puck for the most part. Doesn't have the best hands in the world, but can get 20, 25 goals. Can play the wing there. He's a good addition. You add a good young player. He's signed for this season at 2.2, so you're going to take on a cap at about $600,000 for the remainder of the year. And then he's going to be an RFA, so you have control of him. You're not losing him to free agency. Mark Stewart's a toss-in. Atlanta doesn't lack for defensemen on the back end. They have a fair amount of depth there.
Well, they will if they trade Zach Bogosian.
We'll talk about that later, but... So Stewart's a pending UFA, and he's making 1.5 this year, 1.67 cap hit. So they're just taking him on to make the deal work. In terms of Boston, you're adding, Wheeler. Is he redundant in that roster? Yeah, he might be. And you're adding Peverly. Peverly's still only 27. He seems like he's older, but he's still only 27. He can play on the power play. He's a good setup man. He makes $1.3 million, so a little bit cheaper. Basically gives you kind of the similar stats to Wheeler and it does it for about $900,000 less. And so in terms of that, I like the move. I think he'll probably fit in a little better. He's a little more flexible in terms of where he can play. He can play a little center. He can play wing. He can play point on the power play if need be. So he's a useful player.
You know, Peverly is sort of underrated. He's got 34 points on the year this year for Atlanta. So, you know, you don't think of him much as a guy who can light it up on the score sheet. But, you know, he certainly does have some skills, and he's got some nice hands.
Peverly kind of developed a little bit later. He's one of those guys that he proved himself at 21, 22 in the AHL, and last year had his breakout year, and then this year has been streaky. Obviously, the Bruins here wanted to get rid of Wheeler because of the extra, you know, salary that they picked up. So in this sense, Boston is getting a player that probably is going to benefit more from that change. I think Peverly's numbers will, you know, numbers and play will go up, and he'll become more of a kind of a role player on this team. I don't think they're expecting Peverly to be, you know, to be a primary goal scorer.
No, but it's nice to be able to slot him in on the third line and know that he's going to be able to, that he's got some talent,
well,
and
really,
he knows that he can score.
He's a grinder.
I mean, from Atlanta's perspective, I like it for both sides because you have to create the flexibility for the Cavalier trade, whether I like that one or not. But Atlanta's a younger player. You know, a 23-year-old player, they're gaining 4 years because the Peverly's 27. They're adding a bigger player and more in line with what they want to do. They have some big and physical players, and he can fit in terms of size. He can fit in terms of youth, and you're adding more talent up front, and that's Atlanta's biggest weakness is talent up front.
Well, let me ask this question. What about the addition of Boris Vlahovic to the pick? He's a former first overall draft pick. I mean, he's 7 years ago, 10th overall. Is he just not – an AHL player and just not an NHL player,
NHL
player?
He's a big player. He's about 6'7". He's not the greatest skater, Drew. You know, they say poor man's Zdeno Chara. Very little in terms of Chara. Not a great puck mover. Not awful puck mover, but he's not a good enough skater, and he gets caught, and he gets bad position, and he's a seventh defenseman. He's nothing that's going to – you've watched him play a fair amount, and he's nothing. He's not going to be a substantial contributor to the Boston Bruins back end as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah,
maybe learning from Chara might benefit him because they're similar. I just thought about that now. But
they're both Slovakians.
And they're the same size, shoot the same way. They're basically
they're clones of each other, just obviously one's more talented than the other. The Bruins weren't done wheeling and dealing. They also traded for former Ottawa Senator Chris Kelly, giving up in exchange a second-round draft pick. You know, to me, you know, I lived in Ottawa. I've seen Chris Kelly play a lot of hockey. Never really stood out to me. Getting a second-round draft pick for him seems to me, from Ottawa, to be a good deal.
Yeah, and Chris Kelly is also kind of a specialty player. He's a guy also, like Mike Fisher, has spent his entire career with Ottawa, kind of, you know, grew as part of that team out of, you know, the last, whatever, 7 years. But Boston is obviously going for it this year, and Boston is picking up players that they're picking up players that are going to fill roles. They have enough talent. I mean, Boston right now, I mean, with the acquisitions they've made, I mean, you look at their new roster with Thomas Cabrera, and others that they've added, and you have to, you know, Rich Peverly we just mentioned, and now Chris Kelly. You have to look at their team, and it looks like a team that doesn't have any holes for the playoffs.
Well, where does Kelly slot in this? What does Kelly bring to the Bruins right now?
Well, I mean, I think he's a tad overrated, Drew. You're talking about a guy, obviously, his top point total, you know, his top season was 2006-2007 with the Senators, and he posted 38 points. He's not a point producer. That's his highest total. Gets around 25 to 30 points a year. He's not a face-off guy either. And then, you know, Peter Chiarelli said this week, that he acquired Kelly and he's a good face-off man. He's actually not a good face-off man.
Below 50%.
Most of the time. Once in the past 3 years, he's been over 50%. So I don't know what he's talking about in terms of the face-off man. Is he a defensive forward? Sure. I mean, I have always thought his skating's a bit overrated. People speak to him as being fast. I don't think he's that fast. Offensively, I think he's challenged. I don't think he can create offense for himself. You know, do I think his addition is going to, you know, can he kill penalties and play a role like that? Sure. But again, second-round pick for that. You could have signed Dominic Moore in the offseason for cheaper. You know, Kelly's making $2.1 million cap hit, okay? I was looking at it this way. That was the player you're looking at. Is that the kind of player you're looking at acquire? Why give up the second-round pick? You could have signed Dominic Moore this offseason. You know, the Lightning signed him for 2 years at $1.1 a year. Dominic Moore's a superior player, and he's half the price. And you didn't give up anything aside from money to get him. So, you know, I personally don't think, again, Chris Kelly's going to be the difference there.
It does seem like a lot to give up. That pick, made me scratch my head a little and say, I don't know about that one. Did seem like a lot to give up for a guy.
By the way, all these picks that Boston's turning around. I'm going to mention it again. It's not something you want to do down the road because you're going to have that well's going to run dry soon. You're going to be looking. I know they have young talent. I'm going to say it again, though. second-round picks, third-round picks. These things add up.
And in that sense, you might be mortgaging the future, even though I think that in Boston's case, they have enough young talent. You know, we're talking about Tyler Seguin and like even guys like Milan Lucic. Milan Lucic, he's going to be a Bruin for the next 10 to 15 years. But I think that you're right. Boston's late to the party here. And the thing that's surprising, too, about these deals is that, and Drew, you know, mentioned last week that the Bruins were his cup pick and that they've kind of just the entire season, you know, won 60% of the games. That's why they're in third place in the East. But the thing that's surprising is that Boston's been playing very well lately. And they're obviously seeing holes that have to be playoff-related. Because, you know, you make these trades, Richie, and it's like, okay, exactly, Chris Kelly... Is he going to give you that much offense?
I gotta be honest. You know? Very few GMs to me have a vision that they're going to follow. And I think the best guy at this right now is Mike Gillis in Vancouver. Because you look at Boston. Remember last year the Paille trade? They bring him in. Like they add a lot of redundant, you know, players. You know, they make a lot of trades. It seems like just to make trades. I don't see them getting significantly better from any of these trades. Maybe the Cavalier trade, but I don't like the amount of assets they
give
up.
If they sign him, right?
But you know what I mean, Andy? Like, it just seems like they bring guys in, they bring guys out, they shift guys. It doesn't seem like they're ever getting that much better to me.
You know who did a lot of that back in the day is the Toronto Maple Leafs, bringing guys in for 1 year. Eric Lindros comes to mind.
To me, the Bruins are a better team today than they were last Saturday.
No, I agree with that. On the ice, absolutely, I agree with that, Drew. Do I think in the end it will be a good decision or bad? I don't think they're going to win the Cup, so I don't think it's a great decision.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, we that's fine. It all depends on the Cup. I think they're more. I don't think they're going to win either because I don't think they're as good as Philly. But I think they're more equipped to make a run at it now than they were last Saturday.
Crosby comes back. And Pittsburgh adds a forward at the deadline. Washington just starts, you know, turning up their game a bit. It ain't that easy in the cap system to get out. That's why I don't think that always this 1 year has to be your year. It's a sustainable success to me.
I still don't think they've really hurt their sustainable success, though.
This is what I think, Drew. When you have a young, you know, you have a young stable of players, the Krejcis, the Hortons, and all those guys, right? You have them now. Okay? Sagan is a top three player, so he comes right into the system right away. You know, maybe you get a top 10 pick this year. But what I'm saying is in a couple years, when those guys are 27, 28, 29, and you're looking to the well being like, hey, where are the cheap young players who are good? There's a massive gap.
I don't see the gap as much as you
do. Good teams always, you know, you're a big Toronto Blue Jays fan, Drew.
Yeah.
Isn't the goal of that team to always have young players churning through the system?
That's only because they can't compete with free agency.
You don't think that's a good
I think it is a good policy. I don't think that Boston is really hurt. They're still getting a top 10 pick this year.
No, I realize that.
So the fact that they're not getting a 25th overall pick as well and some second-rounders next year,
Is Boston that good?
Well, if Sagan develops like we expect
talking this year, is Boston that good?
They're not as good as Philadelphia, but they're the second-best team in the East in my mind. Even if Crosby comes back, they're the second-best team in the East. They just are.
They allow the third-most shots against per game.
I know. I mean, you can throw stats at me all you want. I know what I see, and I see them as being the second-best team in the East.
So they allow third-most shots against in the league. Is Thomas Cavalier, you know, maybe putting offense on the ice will help that, but is he going to help that in the defensive zone?
No, we know what his shortcomings
are. Is Jim Thomas going to be able to play the level he's playing at?
We know what their shortcomings are. I still think they are a better team this week than they were last week. And as a result...
I don't disagree with that. I just disagree with
the
long-term plan.
I don't think... Could they have made the Eastern Conference Finals with their roster they had last Saturday? Yes, they could have.
That's my point.
Could they win? Could they beat Philly? No. Can they now? Yes.
I disagree.
I think they have a chance now when they didn't have a chance last week. And that's all you want is a chance. Whereas I think they could objectively look back last week and say no.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
There's a chance. There is definitely a chance.
You know that movie that's from?
No.
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber? Yeah. Oh, yes. That's right. I wouldn't date you in a million years or something?
Well, 100 and... What?
1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, producer Tim is a big fan of Dumb and Dumber. Apparently,
that's what this show should be called. After our conversation.
Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. Dumber.
Funny that I think that's what our parents always call us, isn't it? Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to talk about the Winnipeg Thrasher. The Atlanta Thrasher. Sorry. Did I say that?
True.
My bad. Sorry.
We just lost our Atlanta audience.
Yeah, that's okay. I've already alienated them years ago. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. There's Tim. Tim, is that your band playing some thrash metal there? No?
Is that thrash metal? Does anybody know?
That's thrash metal, you know, with the pending Thrashers interview.
There you go. Excellent pun, Richard. Well done. You brought your punny A game today. I like to see that.
A little plugged up, though.
Yeah, you sound a little hoarse there. Too many late nights?
They call Richie Big Pun.
Too many late nights?
Maybe too many late nights.
Yeah, okay, Richie. You're not as young as you once thought you were. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're pleased to be joined on the line now by Chris Vivlemore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Chris, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Chris, we'll start with the on-ice news regarding the Thrashers, and then we'll probably move to what a lot of our listening audience wants to talk about, and that's, of course, the ownership issues, Atlanta. Let's start with the trade the Thrashers made yesterday, acquiring Blake Wheeler and Mark Stewart. With those two players, what's not to like about the trade for the Thrashers?
I think it's a good thing for the Thrashers in the sense that they needed some scoring. They needed to get bigger up front. When you're looking at your three centers being Rich Peverly, Brian Little, and Alexander Bermishov, when he gets back, that's pretty small. So Blake Wheeler gives them some size. I think maybe, and I think they're hoping that, a change of scenery might get him going. Certainly he's familiar with the coach and Craig Ramsey, so that's going to help. And they've been looking for just one more defenseman to kind of add to the puzzle. They've been lacking a little bit back there of late, so I think that helps them too. And again, another guy who's familiar with Ramsey's system, been injured, so they're hoping again, he gets healthy, he can help him down the stretch.
Chris, this week the Thrashers re-signed Dustin Byfuglien to a much-talked-about 5-year deal worth $26 million. That's a cap hit of $5.2 million. Now, first off, what's the attitude around the team regarding that signing? And as a part B to that question, why did the team give Byfuglien about $1.5 million more per season than they did Tobias Enstrom, who you could argue is a better defenseman?
I think for his offensive capabilities as well, and Enstrom's kind of a quiet guy and not big in, the public eye, where Byfuglien is good in that regard. And if you're looking to build your franchise and you need a face, and they do after losing Ilya Kovalchuk, then Byfuglien might kind of be that guy. And certainly his, like I said, his offensive capability, not to take anything away from his defense at this point, but obviously, as you're right, Enstrom's a better defender at this point. Mm-hmm. And helps him tremendously in a pairing, but, with his shot, with his, at times, stick-handing ability, and he can always still get him in front of the net, that helps them a lot. So I think that's kind of all contributed to why you give him that kind of salary.
Chris, we've obviously heard a lot over the last 2 weeks about Zach Bogosian and how he might be unhappy with some of the Atlanta coaches or one Atlanta coach or the team. Is he on the trading block, and if he is, why is that?
I don't think so. I had the GM, Rick Dudley, on a call yesterday talking about the trade, and I asked him that again directly, is Zach Bogosian, would he consider trading Zach Bogosian? And his answer was, well, even Wayne Gretzky's been traded, but his plan at this time, and he does not expect to trade Zach Bogosian, and I wouldn't think he would at this point. They're trying to build the team here. They're doing it with young players. Certainly way too early to give up on the number 3 overall pick. I think it's a little bit of much ado about nothing with the conflict he's had with the coaching staff. I just think, they're trying to teach him new aspects of the game, things he hasn't always had to do, but that this coaching staff has nothing to do, and so there's a little, learning curve there. So I did not expect him to be traded.
Chris, are you surprised at how poor the team is defensively, given head coach Craig Ramsey's defensive pedigree?
A little bit, because when you come in, you thought you had 6 solid defensemen, and you thought it was going to, that would be a strength of this team, and certainly here over the last 24, 25 games has not been. And so I think that's why, and even going into the season, I think they wanted another defenseman to strengthen that unit. So that's why I'm not surprised they took a chance on Stewart. We'll see how that works out, but certainly what you thought was going to be a strength has not been down the stretch here when they needed it.
We're joined on the line by Chris Vivlemore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Chris, we have to make that transition to the ownership, and I guess the first question is, are the current Atlanta owners willing and committed to finding a local ownership, or are they just going to be selling this team, if they're selling it, to the highest bidder?
If I take the owner who I interviewed this week at his word, they're certainly still trying to find investors, and I think the public plea, while maybe not necessarily pleasing to the NHL, was one of those efforts to say, hey, we're serious. And I don't think it's an empty threat, but I don't think it's a done deal. They're gone yet, but I mean, it's certainly a, you know, an outward cry to say, hey, we're serious here. We do need help. So if I take him at his word, and I have no reason not to, you know, I do still think they're looking for people here that want to invest and help and keep it here.
Chris, I know who he is because I read your blog, but for those who haven't read your blog, who is Steven Rollins, and should we be taking him seriously?
At this point, and his name has come up quite a bit here in the last year, at this point I have no reason to believe that that group is a serious group. But that being said, I spoke to him again yesterday. He claims he's got an investment group. He claims they have the wherewithal to do it. But I've talked to league sources and I've talked to team sources, and at this point, it's no closer to being done than it was. My understanding is it's no closer to being done than it was when he initially expressed interest in doing it. Now, you know, whether that moves forward remains to be seen, but, you know, that's where we stand now.
Chris, basic question. I mean, it seems like this Atlanta Thrashers ownership group has been trying to get, you know, rid itself of this investment from basically from day one. Why did they purchase the team in the first place?
Well, it came, you know, it was a kind of a package deal, and I think they thought the group they put together, and they wanted to keep it in Atlanta. But I think all along they thought they were going to need help, especially, you know, trying to get the hockey team established more. It's been woefully inconsistent over the 10 years, one playoff berth, no wins. So that was going to take some building. But when you very early on in the process then lose perhaps the owner with the deepest pockets, then it becomes an issue. So, you know, they say all along they expected to lose some money, not this much. They hope to have even somebody else come in after they purchased it to help, because they knew there were going to be some losses.
Chris, and Bill Daly said on this show a couple months ago, he alluded to the fact that the arena location was somewhat of an issue in terms of drawing crowds. Is that the case? And if so, you know, why is it that much of an issue?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I can see, yes, where it is an interest. It's right in an issue. It is right in downtown. There's not a lot of parking around. It doesn't lend itself to the atmosphere that, say, if you want to compare it to other southern cities here, like a Raleigh has, where there's a big punt, people go and eat, or Tampa, where it's, you know, in downtown, but there's tremendous amounts of restaurants in the channel side and things for people to do there. And a great deal of the hockey-interested market here lives in the suburbs, and it's not always a difficult thing to get in, or it's not always an easy thing to get in. So I think that's part of the issue. There is a public transportation station right outside the arena, and so that's a plus on one side. But, you know, to a certain segment of the fan base here, where the arena is an issue.
Chris, we're going to let you go on this final question. Where is this team going to be playing hockey next season?
That's a $175 million question or so. I my gut tells me that, you know, this is not a done deal that they're gone, but it's certainly headed in that direction. Now, whether this thing can get turned around quick enough so that they're in Winnipeg or Quebec or another city by the start of the season, I'm not sure yet. But if you take the owner at his word and his plea, moving is certainly a real possibility at this point, possibly more real than it has been.
That's a good answer, Chris. Thanks very much for joining us. Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, again, thank you for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, take care, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, food for thought. I mean, from the start of this whole saga, be it in the Phoenix or in Atlanta, it always seemed to me that the easiest team to for this to get, the easiest way this deal gets done is with Atlanta.
Because the owner wants out.
The owner wants out. Owners. There's no bankruptcy court. There's nothing of that nature. It's not the, you know, Phoenix was the first team in the South. So when that fails, it's more symbolic than if another random team fails.
And also, Drew, I mean, Bill Daly wouldn't have made the comments he made on our show.
Yes.
Had there not been some...
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
I think there's... And the funny thing is, obviously there's been trouble, Drew, with this ownership group since they bought the team in, what, 03 or 04?
Who knows? They've been in court since the day they bought the team.
But this year alone, I think there's actually been more turmoil with this ownership group than in Phoenix because, well, in Phoenix there isn't an ownership group.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, just based on... It seems like everyone is just really tired of Atlanta, the Atlanta spirit, and how... They've basically been infighting for 5 years.
It's a good point, Izzy.
That's very true.
That's a good point because the you know, as we saw here, you know, when fans aren't happy with ownership or Winnipeg Enterprises, whatever it may be, the backlash goes towards the team and supporting the team, and that's a very good point.
And there's nothing but hostility from the fans to the Atlanta ownership, and for good reason, too. The fans in Atlanta have been lied to from day one. Let's go to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes, which is going to be more trades. Jump while we go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10:15 in the morning here. We just heard from Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who, well, anyways, you heard the interview. The Thrashers, Winnipeg Thrashers, Manitoba Bears, whoever knows.
He's not overly optimistic about that team staying there, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's funny, though, there's already a Winnipeg Thrashers AAA team.
That's what Tim actually said off air just a minute ago, is that they play out of Dakota.
Great minds
Gateway,
think
sorry,
alike.
Gateway.
Very smart minds think alike. Yeah.
Yeah. It's time for NHL news and notes.
Well, Ian White, who's from Steinbach, Manitoba, which isn't that far away from where we are right now.
Thanks for the geography lesson. Did you use a Google map for that one?
He has been traded 3 times. He has a major deficiency. Ian White, he's a smaller guy, not very physical. He is able to close gaps on defense when he needs to, but one of the main reasons why Ian White has been traded is because there's a little bit more to be desired from Ian White. He has a lot of talent offensively, and his best offensive year was with the Leafs, and I think he actually went a little bit under the radar because the Leafs obviously have had a poor regular season every year since the lockout. But I think San Jose needs this guy. I mean, look at a guy like Jason Demers or a guy like Marc-Edward Vlasic. They're giving the Sharks nothing offensively right now. And I mean, you've got Dan Boyle, who is a top 5 offensive defenseman.
Agreed. No, that's fair.
But I mean, Ian White is going to give you a little bit more for less than
issue with the White being traded too, Drew. I mean, he was an integral part of the Phaneuf deal, and they thought they were getting a fairly good return or whatever return it may be for an overrated defenseman like Phaneuf. And then he was traded from Calgary to Carolina, and Carolina sounds like he's a pending UFA, Drew. That's one of the reasons. Okay. And Babchuk was going to give him a little bit more of a hammer shot. Doesn't necessarily mean he's not a contributor. Carolina required him. Maybe he wasn't what they expected, but maybe they also didn't think they could re-sign him. And then so they negotiated with him, didn't think they could re-sign him, and they gave up and they got a second-round pick for him. So they turned Babchuk into a second-round pick. San Jose is a good talent evaluation. I like Ian White's game. He can move the puck. He's got a pretty good slap shot. He's not Anton Babchuk in terms of the slap shot, but he can skate. I mean, as he nailed in terms of his size is an issue, his physicality is an issue, but he's willing to muck it up a bit. He can play top 4 minutes. He can play your fourth, you know, your number 4 minutes there in San Jose. And it's not Thomas Cavalier, but San Jose, Dougie Wilson's another guy with a vision. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure I want any vision tied to Joe Thornton. But give him credit for the fact that it's been sustainable success there.
He's going to improve San Jose's power play. Hey, hold on, they didn't acquire Alexander Ovechkin here, but Ian White, I think he's a little bit underrated. I think as a smallish defenseman, he's been underrated, and I think, you know, when he was traded from Calgary to Carolina earlier this year, to me that was because Jim Rutherford wanted someone thrown in to take Brett Sutter. I think that Sutter was made because they wanted to trade Brett Sutter to Carolina, and Ian White was traded. And Ian White wasn't putting up the biggest numbers, you know, earlier this season. But I really think that
Sutter was, nobody wants
Ian White. Ian White could still play
Sutter's
defense on Calgary.
Sutter's an AHL player. He's not making an AHL. I think it's look. I like the trade for San Jose, but I think it's insulting to Thomas Cavalier to say that Boston would have been better off paying, you know, what
didn't say they're better off.
Well, you're saying there's not a big difference between the two of them, though.
I'm saying, considering the conversation given up, there's not a big difference between the two of them.
I just think if...
It's the bottom of the line second-round pick.
I think San Jose probably gave up too much for Ian White.
But you don't think the Boston gave up too much
for Caberle.
I thought Boston gave up a lot for Caberle. I don't know that they necessarily
Sorry, they had all the leverage.
I thought they necessarily...
Nobody else wanted him. He wouldn't go anywhere else. You're in the division. He's a pending UFA. Burke's got to trade him. I would have said, hey, Burke, here's a first-round pick. Take it or leave it. You have until the deadline. Here's Joe Cobart in the second-round pick. Take it or leave it. You're not going to get any better. He doesn't want to go anywhere else. He wants to stay in Toronto.
St. Louis traded Eric Brewer to Tampa Bay yesterday for Brock Bukaboom and the third-round pick.
Now we're going to have...
We're going to have Kyle on. Kyle Kozier, a very good prospect. He used to write Prospect Pulse for the Illegal Curve website.
I spoke to him about Bukaboom yesterday. He's going to give us more insight because he's seen him.
Seen him play.
And for our listeners... For our listeners, of course, that is Jeff Bukaboom's son.
Yes, of course. St. Louis trades their captain to Tampa. From Tampa's perspective,
another vision guy. Another vision guy right there. Dougie Wilson, Steve Eiser, and Mike Gillis.
Okay, well, what does Eric Brewer bring to the... I mean, Tampa Bay's weak on defense.
What does Eric Brewer bring to the table? Eric Brewer is a tremendous skater. He's a big guy. He's not overly physical. He's got a big stick. He can close the gap pretty well. Considering his speed and his size, he can close the gap pretty well. He never turned to the physical defense when people wanted. He never turned to the offensive defense when people wanted, especially in the power play. He really isn't as good of a puck mover as maybe some may think. But he can make a good first pass. And he can be a solid top four defenseman. You add him into the group there. Hedman's really coming to his own offensively, right? So you have that. You have Marc-Andre Bergeron for specialty in terms of the power play. You want him out there. And you have Kubina. So in reality, you need a guy to secure your top four, and you push a guy like Brett Clark down a bit and give him a little bit easier minutes. And you solidify your top four. You solidify overall. You're giving up a guy like Bukaboom with, a solid defenseman.
Worth noting, Bukaboom is unsigned still.
Okay.
He's still unsigned, so if they don't get that rectified, he can go back into the draft.
And then a third-round pick. You have to weigh Bukaboom versus Colborne, and we're going to talk to Kyle about both of those. But what about Eric Brewer instead of Thomas Caberle?
Well, Brock Bukaboom doesn't have a huge upside here. He's got 8 points in...
He's a solid stay-at-home defenseman.
Yeah, he's got 8 points in 44 minutes in the OHL this year, 54 penalty minutes. So he's a solid stay-at-home defenseman.
Better skater than his father.
But obviously, St. Louis has seen something. One of their scouts has told them something they like. But, guys... This is a win for Steve Yzerman big time. To me, this is a huge win. This is a trade win for Tampa and Stevie Y. Eric Brewer was obviously with Stevie Y in 2002, and Brewer was the captain of the Blues, and his offensive numbers maybe haven't gone up as he's progressed, but his defensive play has stayed rock solid. I think that Eric Brewer now goes to the Lightning and is arguably their number one defenseman. I mean, you've got Pavel Kubina, you've got Matthias Olin, you've got Victor Hedman, who's still developing. But I think with his experience, Eric Brewer is almost the defensive defenseman that you've now got. And I think that's a great move. I think Stevie Y, once again, made a great move here.
I don't know if I agree with that as necessarily in terms of the best defenseman, but I would agree with the great move.
Anaheim Ducks traded Paul Mara to the Montreal Canadiens for a fifth-round pick in 2012.
Did look at fifth-round picks for hockey prospectus a couple years ago now, a year and a half. I mean, they're essentially the same as seventh-round picks or unrestricted, undrafted free agents. So, in reality, the fifth-round pick carries little value. Montreal's trying to solidify their back end because of so many injuries. Paul Mara's not the fastest guy. He can move the puck a bit. He's a little bit physical. It's a fine move either way. It doesn't really...
Anaheim wasn't playing Mara. Goes back to where he was in Montreal last season. And he had some success in Montreal.
He got injured, but he was not bad before he got injured. And he knows Jacques Martin's system. I think that's important because Jacques Martin is as much of a systems coach as any coach in the National Hockey League.
Hey, guys, Montreal's going to the playoffs, and with Wisniewski's little minor injury there, the Habs need a veteran like Mara. They had to make a deal like this.
To give up a fifth-round pick, it's like you said, they're giving up the equivalent of nothing. So,
you can
add a player to your roster with giving up pretty much negligible in return. So it certainly
And you do have playoff aspirations here, and it's a serviceable defenseman as opposed to the alternative really isn't much here.
He also gets them bigger, which is important because that's not a
physical.
That's a Smurf-like team. Yeah. So anytime they can add a guy.
But at the same time, Drew, if he was that effective,
they would have kept him from last year, of course. Second last trade, God help us. Ottawa trades Jarkko Ruutu to Anaheim for a sixth-round pick.
So sixth-round pick, nothing in terms of, just a nominal return there. Ruutu is a pest.
He annoys you. I sort of thought they could get more for that, though.
They can put Ruutu and LaPierre together. I mean, you might not ever want to go on the ice against those two annoying...
Yeah, they're sandpaper.
Yeah, you know what? He's a fourth-line fourth-line left winger. I mean, the Ducks have a little bit of lack of depth on their bottom two lines, but
what it takes to play in the playoffs.
And he played. I agree. I mean, he's a guy who's played in the playoffs before with Pittsburgh, with Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, he'll annoy you, and he's not going to do much for you, but he's not going to hurt you. I thought sixth-round pick, they might be able to get a little more for him.
I'm with you, Drew. I actually am here. Jarkko Ruutu, for what he offers at this point, the Ducks have to be thinking rent-a-player here. Because
was a petty UFA.
They're not planning on re-signing him.
Right. They have to be thinking we're not probably going to re-sign him because a sixth-round pick for Ottawa is.
I'm thinking if I'm Ottawa,
I don't want to save the money here, guys.
Whatever. But I mean, I understand. Look, I understand why Ottawa trades him. If I'm Ottawa, I might wait till the 28th to make that trade. See if you can ramp up the. You know, see if the market ramps up.
Most
a little
you would
bit
have
more.
Got is a fifth, Drew. Most.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
Fifth and a half round pick, Drew.
Okay.
Last trade.
Brian Elliott gets traded. From the Ottawa Senators to Colorado for Craig Anderson, goaltender for goaltender.
Now, Craig Anderson was a really good signing by Greg Sherman 2 years ago. Greg Sherman's done a pretty good job there in Colorado, accumulating assets for the most part.
But the pressure, he's put the bullseye right on himself with his moves yesterday, yeah. though.
He acquired Brian Elliott, who's obviously younger than Anderson. He's going young here, guys, let's be real. I mean, he's going young. He's got Brian Elliott here. The team, as Forsberg knows, done. They have their defense is especially young. Brian Elliott, a 25-year-old netminder, clearly don't think Buda is the guy for the most part, so they're going to try Elliott. Clearly their scouts saw something in him. He makes only $850,000 a year, so he's cheap. In terms of Ottawa, moving forward, I think Anderson is the better netminder of the two, and Anderson is a pending UFA, so, you know, he only makes 1.8. They signed him from Florida when he was a backup with Kuhn. The question is, can they re-sign him to a reasonable contract? Because I think he's a pretty solid goaltender.
You know, he's somebody, he's a good gap bridger until Robin Lehner is ready.
I agree. I think that's exactly right. I think that's very well put.
And last year he was so successful in Colorado, and this year he's left the team recently because of some sort of, they've had some sort of incident, that's been unreported, but there's definitely been some sort of conflict there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good trade, Colorado gets Brian Elliott, who's, like you said, young and doesn't have a great upside, but he's whatever. He's serviceable. He's better than Buda, in my mind.
I think he's better than Buda.
Colorado might get a guy who, if Craig Anderson likes playing in Ottawa, he might be your goalie for the next year and a half until Leonard's ready.
Well, Anderson's had his worst save percentage this year that he's had since 2005, 2006, but I think that he hasn't played a ton of NHL games, but I think that he's a good bridge. I think he's a good bridge to Leonard.
Let's go to break. When we come back, there's been more injuries on the Vancouver Canucks. Well, I think
unbelievable, eh?
The defense there. I'm fairly certain, Richie, you're getting the call up to play D for the Canucks for the next couple weeks. So congratulations.
Oh,
on
God,
that.
Me on D.
Yeah, I know. You can't.
Evan Oberg might have something to
say
about that.
You're not a physical defenseman, that's for sure. Let's go to break and come back and talk about the Canucks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.